Welcome in to another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with Charlie Goldsmith at Paul Brown Stadium to break down the Bengals loss today to the Chargers. An interesting game from the minute this game started to the end, with just a lot of uncharacteristic things from the Bengals. But at the end of the day, the Bengals proved one thing, in my opinion, that is the overlying theme here, is this team is very inconsistent. They seem to ride waves where they haven't been able to stack more than two wins without dropping one the following week. And I think that's something that they got to figure out, because in order to make the playoffs, they're going to have to be able to stack some of these wins. What were your initial thoughts at this performance today from Cincinnati?
Yeah, the turnovers and the inconsistency of the defense, specifically the secondary against a great deep ball thrower, make me look at this entire sample size we have over the course of the season. Now it feels like we've seen enough that we can be confident that those two things are legitimate issues and legitimate concerns. We're going to spend so much time between now and January speaking about where the Bengals stack up in the AFC North. But when you look at the difficulty with turnovers and the difficulty in the secondary against elite passers like Herbert, that's what makes you reconsider how elite the Bengals can be this season.
My main thought here is Jamar Chase in this offense. The last couple of weeks has really been non-existent, in terms of, not that he hasn't gotten the targets, but he has been a different player in terms of the first month of this season. He was unstoppable. You couldn't watch a Bengals game without walking away saying, that guy is a special guy. He can change things for this offense. Recently, I just haven't seen it from Jamar Chase. And I'm wondering, obviously, Mike Tomlin said, you know, the league kind of catches up to rookies every year. Every rookie has like a breakout month. But let's start with Jamar Chase. Obviously, he had that big time drop today, and that was a big, it resulted in an interception that the Chargers then scored on, and it just was, as Zach Taylor said, sloppy. Those are plays that Jamar Chase has to make. There's just no excuse to drop a ball when you're that wide open and your quarterback hits you in stride, especially if that is what you are going to be for this offense. And obviously, a player doesn't go a whole season without making mistakes, but he just hasn't been impressively sharp lately. I think that's how I would characterize
Jamar Chase. It was funny. What that play reminded me of was the Brandon Stokely play in reverse, that crazy Gus Johnson call on the Bengals game where the Bengals corner tipped it up. Stokely catches it, sprints to the end zone, scores, game over. Like this play obviously wasn't a game winner, but it had such a huge difference in the overall momentum of the game. Here's though what I think about Jamar. So if Williams holds up against on his block in the first drive of the game against an edge rusher who had, I think, three sacks all season before today, then Chase opens the game, I think, with the 60-yard touchdown. He was wide open on that play, and Burrow was paying less attention to the pass rush because he knew he was ready to throw the ball to Chase. Then if Chase catches that ball on the right sideline, that's 140 yards and two touchdowns. Plus, it was a 140-yard day for T. Higgins. What the Bengals did today is what they've always done since the bye week. Specifically, they targeted the weakest corner today. That was Tavon Campbell. Higgins had, I think, a career high 138, and Burrow picked apart the zone coverage with out routes to Higgins. So it was more of a Higgins day, and Chase still had the opportunities. And again, while I think Chase did his job today, the one exception is the bobble on the near touchdown catch that, again, changed the entire game.
Well, but it's been kind of a pattern. Like, you look at the drop in the end zone in against the Jets. Those are all momentum changing plays where at the end of the day, these two games, the Jets game where he had the drop, and then this game today, like, those games are the ones the Bengals want to have. And as Trey Hendricks said following today's performance, the Bengals needed to win today's game. They need to learn how to win these games, especially when you got it at home and your head coach says this is the most important game of the season so far. But yes, T. Higgins with another big performance. That's now back-to-back weeks for him with over 100 receiving yards. So good to see that kind of evolving, because we were wondering when that was going to really take off. The Bengals weren't able to get the run game going in the way that they had the last 2 weeks, but a lot of that had to do with the lead that the Chargers jumped out to. What did you think the Chargers did particularly good early on to prevent Joe Mixon from kind of get going?
turning the ball over. So what happened early on was Joey Bosa was having a really big impact on the game. The Bengals were getting second and long, third and long. And then what happens is Burrow gets that strip sack, obviously a game-changing play, opposite Bosa from the other side. Then that deep ball to Chase was a near-great opportunity. Turnover, all of a sudden you're down 16 to nothing with a snap of the fingers. I think the Bengals stuck with the run. I think that, like, for example, that drive that ended with the mix and fumble was a drive where they were trying to lean on the power run. The efficiency just wasn't there. And if you want to pin, I guess, the game plan on one thing, it did get the sense that not every play the offense was in the best position to overcome the two new starters they had starting for the first time at that specific position this season. And Trey Hill and Isaiah Prince, I think there were a moment in pass protection where miscommunications or poor decisions based on the play calling ultimately led to Joe Burrow being put in a bad spot. I think I look at the two-point conversion attempt where the Bengals tried to run the ball up the middle and couldn't convert because the offensive lineman didn't get enough push against a bad run defense. So I guess overall, the concern of the offense, I would start with Hill. I would start with Prince, and I would start with kind of the resulting decision-making that, again, didn't always put Burrow and Mixon both in the same position to be successful.
Yeah, hopefully Riley Reiff and Trey Hopkins, it's only a one-week situation for them in terms of missing time, because there was a noticeable drop-off with those guys in there today in terms of they had some costly penalties that knocked the team back. Just not a smooth operation across the board. Let's talk about the defensive play up for the Bengals today. First quarter, they didn't look like the team we had seen. And you brought up a good point of who are the Bengals against a quarterback who can really throw the ball down the field? Because we hadn't seen – the Bengals hadn't really played a quarterback since Aaron Rodgers that could really carve them apart down the field. And today, the showing wasn't good at first. They settled in and made some adjustments. But I also thought that Justin Herbert made some pretty bad decisions in terms of distributing the ball and giving the Bengals chances to pick him off.
It was set the tone early in the game for the Chargers offense was the three deep balls. And what stood out to me was who was in position to stop them and where they were. My read was the Bengals were playing a ton of zone defense. And what happened was the Chargers kind of looked for matchups in the zone. So for example, if they expected Hilton to drop back and be on one end, which he was like on that one deep ball to Williams on the sideline, or if they saw Eli Apple in a zone by himself, which was that first deep ball to Mike Williams, that's where they went, and they kind of went after the weaknesses in the zone based on where they lined up Mike Williams. And then on that deep ball where Bates got beat, Bates was just not in his typical too high position. And again, it was a sense of a zone style defense that was susceptible to wide receivers winning when they had opportunities against they could dictate more where they wanted to go with their receivers. And just schematically, it wasn't working in the first half, at least, to keep Herbert from finding big plays down the field.
Well, let's talk about the defense, where they go from here, because the road doesn't get any easier. They play Jimmy Garoppolo next week, who is capable of throwing the ball down the field. Then a couple weeks later, they play Patrick Mahomes. So they've got you don't have to worry about it much with the Broncos, but they got some quarterbacks left on their schedule who are capable of throwing the ball down the field and really testing a secondary. And I guess we'll start with the most concerning thing for me with this Bengals performance today was the injuries that took place. Because if the Bengals are going to lose Logan Wilson, we don't know the severity of his shoulder injury. I'll preface that by saying by no means am I trying to say that this is official, but the cart did get taken out for him. If you look at the pictures of him, he looks like he's in serious pain. It's a shoulder injury. If that is a season-ending injury for Logan Wilson, the Bengals are in trouble at the linebacker room.
Yeah, I'll just look at, like, start with next week. The Bengals are facing George Kittle.
Yep.
And then by the end of the season, they're going to have to face Mark Andrews again and Travis Kelce, and then finish the season against a Cleveland team that has multiple tight ends that they use creatively with their scheme. So who is the Bengals linebacker that's they're going to lean on the most in the middle of the field? Even if it is just a one-week injury for Logan Wilson without him, that's leaning on Joe Bachy and Jermaine Pratt, or completely new packages that the Bengals kind of tested some today a little. They gave a test run a bit to more Ricardo Allen and Trey Flowers. Vernon Hargraves played outside, but Wilson was the Bengals' best defender in the middle of the field, specifically against those matchups entering today's game. And now you're right, that is the biggest reason to be concerned for the defense, because he was such a big part of about what they do schematically. like even against a running back. I didn't notice Austin Eckler creating explosive plays in the pass game today, which he's capable of doing. A large part of that goes to what Logan Wilson's able to do in the middle. And without him, that's concerned because Wilson's been one of the defense's best players.
Mm-hmm. And he's also been playing really well the last couple of weeks after the bye. I think he's been playing as well as he has all season. The other significant injury is to Chidobe Awuzie, who it doesn't seem, I mean, we don't know, but he was doubtful to return. He didn't end up coming back in the game. I honestly watched him. He didn't really move from the bench. He sat on the bench for the remainder of the game. He's your top corner, your top corner, your top cover guy. It'd be a tough situation for the Bengals defense to be without Logan Wilson and Awuzie against some of these offenses they're going to face. You obviously don't know how long he's going to be out, but two of very good players for the Bengals defense suffered injuries, and the Bengals had avoided the injury bug for a long time this season, and it kind of hit them on the defensive side of the ball today.
Yeah, they've been very lucky, and now this is the case where some of that luck starts to turn in the other direction. Awuzie, like, people forget how good of a season he's having, too. That interception he had today, yeah. The ball skills that took to be underneath that route, to kind of snag it out of the air from a backwards direction, was as good of a play, again, with ball skills, that you'll see a cornerback make. Without him, obviously, there was a shakeup on the depth chart. Eli Apple and Vernon Hargraves playing outside. And while Herbert didn't target those matchups specifically, all of a sudden the secondary becomes much more of an issue schematically when opposing teams are game planning against the Bengals.
Yep. So keep an eye on those. We'll obviously have updates as they come this week, but things not looking good for the Bengals from an injury standpoint on the defensive side of the ball with those two injuries taking place. There's two more topics, Charlie, I wanted to talk about before we head out. Joe Burrow's pinky injury today. He said he suffered to his right throwing hand, a pinky injury. He said he dislocated it on the first, I think it was the first drive of the game for the Bengals offense when he was, it was a strip sack, and he said he didn't really remember exactly when, but it happened on that drive and didn't really bother him until right before the half. He was constantly on the sideline when the Bengals defense was on the field, keeping his hand hot, trying out the tape, trying out the glove with Brandon Allen and the trainers. Do you think that Burrow said, I'm not going to miss any games because of this? He says it's going to be something I have to work through, but do you think this is a bigger deal than he might be leading on?
I don't. Burrow made some incredible throws today. And again, the strip sack was the first series of the game, and think of how many moments he had after that. That deep ball to Chase, that Chase bobbled, might have been Burrow's most accurately placed deep ball he's thrown to Chase this entire season. The out routes to T. Higgins over the or onto the sideline were perfectly placed, had velocity. Burrow overcame a ton of the issues today. And unless there's like some swelling or a major setback with the pinky, if Burrow's able to do what he did today and be at the level he's at today, there's no concern. Because Burrow, with the exception of an awful decision and an interception in the fourth quarter, but honestly, at that point, the game was more or less decided. Aside from that one play, Burrow played a really impressive game, even though he wasn't at 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he will definitely be keeping an eye on that pinky injury for Joe Burrow. But the last topic I wanted to talk about was the game management situations for the Bengals today, specifically with Zach Taylor. He pointed out the two situations following the game, and Zach Taylor was as critical of himself as I've ever seen today, saying those decisions he made and the lack of communication between him and his players was horrific. He said completely on him, and honestly, it might make him have trouble sleeping tonight. But let's talk about the first situation, and that was the Bengals trying to go for two and just a complete mess up from everybody involved in terms of the Bengals. We're going to go for two. Then Zach Taylor calls a timeout. You expect coming out of the timeout, flawless execution. Anything but that took place. The Bengals then, Zach said he couldn't get the call in. He said it backwards. Then he was trying to change it. And then the next thing you know, they take a delay of game penalty after a timeout. And then they're knocked back 5 yards. And then Evan McPherson misses the extra point. So they went from being able to try to get two to coming away with 0 points. So that was a weird sequence of events. What did you make of all of that?
I don't know. It's the kind of moment where you have to be in the headset, and the same one, you'll get to this, I'm sure, before halftime. The Bengals are at about the 50. Yeah. Burrow looks like he's ready to spike, but no one ever sets up, and the clock runs out on the first half. I do believe this season headset communication has been a strength between Taylor and Burrow. Like, I look back at that last drive against Jacksonville and how good the communication was on that drive. So it's not a trend, but two plays today are extremely concerning. They're the definition of things that can't happen, and it's inexcusable. Zach Taylor's right.
Yeah, it is. And just adding on to that play right before the half, Joe Burrow also took responsibility for it, but Zach Taylor said it was a weird situation because it was a third down. They wanted one more pass play. Joe Burrow wanted to spike it, and there was just not the level of communication. But regardless, that can't happen where the clock just runs off and they walk away into the halftime saying, I don't even know what just took place. I was sitting in the press box saying, what exactly just happened? Because it was very weird. Not typical that we've seen that from the Bengals, but Zach Taylor, super critical of himself in those situations. And it can happen, but Zach still is a young coach and he'll learn from moments like that. So hopefully more of those don't pop up because, like you said, those are inexcusable things and they can cost you games.
It was a sign of this most of all for me. Like the frustration on the Bengals sideline in the first half was more than I've seen all season. There was an expectation and a standard for this game that the Bengals saw as realistic and reasonable that they completely didn't meet when they went down 24-0. The frustration you saw on the sideline from Burrow, from Taylor, from Mixon, across the roster, probably at every position group, as the Bengals went down by that much, frustration was palpable. And those were the moments that you saw those miscommunications. And I do believe, just theoretically, there's a connection there. And it was a symptom of the Bengals going down as much as they did. And the frustration kind of compounded with those moments.
Do you think now moving forward, the Bengals obviously moving to 7-5, they host the 49ers next week. Obviously, the 49ers are in the NFC, so it's not an AFC showdown taking place. Do you think that there's any more emphasis on the Bengals getting this win against the 49ers next week?
Man, I just think they have a lot to fix. First, they need to figure out what schemes they're able to run based off who's available. They can't come up with the same ideas for the passing game or the zone defense they use today if Hopkins and Reef are still out and if Awuzie and Wilson aren't able to play. They can't lean on the talent they have on defense if that talent isn't there. They're going to need to see what they have, and they're going to need to work even harder to develop a game plan accordingly against a well-coached San Francisco team. There's a lot of urgency at this point of the season, obviously, and today showed, kind of to circle back to the beginning, today showed that the Bengals have flaws, and 3 months into the season, those flaws aren't going anywhere, and it's the reason to be concerned. Coming off a great win over Pittsburgh, it's the reason to not see the playoffs as a guarantee. It's a reason there's so much going on down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're certainly going to make it interesting for us over these next couple of games. A lot to be determined about this team. Well, that's it for Charlie and I. We will be back this week to break down more in-depth analysis of the next game between the Bengals and the 49ers.